Hey everyone, welcome to North Point Community Church. We're so glad you could join us for today's podcast. If you have any questions or want to learn how you can be more engaged with our church, check us out online at northpoint.org, or you can connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. And make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you can access these messages as well as stories and other material created specifically for that platform. Thanks for listening and enjoy today's message.
Part two of Scared to Death. We have a growing sense of fear in our culture, in our society, and we felt like it was appropriate for us to just talk about it. So in this series, we're talking about the idea of being scared to death. Last week, we talked about the future because most fear, in fact, I hesitate to say all because I don't feel confident enough to say all, but I think it's all. I think all of our fear is really about something looming in the future, some kind of uncertainty, something we're afraid we're going to lose, something we're afraid we're going to happen. So last week we unpacked the fear of the future. Today we're going to talk about the perpetual anxiety in the present. And next week we're going to talk about the problem with the past. What do we do about the past? Because though our fear is usually something out in the future, it's rooted in something from the past. So what do we do about that? We're going to talk about that next week. Last week, we led with this definition. Here's what fear is. In case you're a note taker, in case you're a person that needs to know what are the terms that we're talking about and how are we defining them, here's how I define fear. Fear is an emotion. It's something we feel. It's an unpleasant emotion caused by the belief of looming potential loss. There's some sort of looming loss in the future, and it's creating a fear in us. And fear has a cousin. Fear has a relative. Fear has an unpleasant companion emotion associated with it. And it's this, anxiety. Anxiety. Would you say we're more anxious today than we were a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago? I certainly would. I believe anxiety is growing. I just from the time that I spend in conversations, I have a lot of conversations with a lot of students. My background is in student ministry, and I'm still trying to look like a student. And I enjoy students. I love being around students. But one of the things that's true, and you can relate to this, if you don't suffer from anxiety, you know someone who does. And if you're a parent of a teenager, you know that students are suffering from anxiety at an alarming rate. I saw this statistic. This is scary, but the average high school student today, listen to this. The average high school student today has the same rate of anxiety, the same level of anxiety as a psychiatric patient from the 1950s. That's alarming, right? In fact, I have read about how anxious America is. America in general is just anxious. In fact, we are more anxious than pretty much every other country on planet Earth. In fact, I read that if someone immigrates to America from another country, they naturally get more anxious. They just become more anxious just by being here. There's a lot of other benefits to being here, I think. But one of the side effects is that you might become more anxious. I don't know. That should be a part of the conversation around immigration, I would say. It's at least a caution. Hey, be careful. There's a lot of great things in America, but you might also get a little more anxious. Over the last 80 years, I saw this statistic that for the last 80 years that we are growing in our anxiety, that we have gotten more anxious every year for 80 years. Which I think makes sense, right? We've been through a couple of world wars. We've had some really difficult things happen in our economy. We wrestled through, went through, dealt with 9/11. We had the financial collapse of 2007-2008, which made it seem now all of a sudden, or made us aware of the uncertainty of our financial situations. There is a lot of anxiety. And it's a problem. Anxiety is a problem. And I recognize that I am just a guy, because of that, I recognize I don't have all of the answers. I wish I could just tell you something today to just help you or help someone you love or help someone you know, but I recognize that may or may not happen. But what I genuinely believe, no matter where you are, no matter who you are, no matter how much anxiety you struggle with, I believe it can get better. That's why I've decided today to spend the majority of our time talking about an issue that is plaguing our culture, our society, in hopes that maybe something good would come of today. Here's the way I am going to define anxiety for the conversation today. Anxiety is the present emotion. It's the current feeling of fear, really, of inner turmoil produced by the uncertainty of the future. It's the unpleasant present emotion. We feel it, right? We literally feel anxiety. Anxiety has all kinds of side effects. In fact, you might be wondering, do I struggle with anxiety? Well, here's how you might know if you do struggle with anxiety. If you have headaches, muscle pain, tension, sleep disturbances, tightness felt through the body, especially in the head, neck, jaw, face, chest pain, ringing and pulsing in the ears, excessive sweating, shaking, trembling, cold chills, hot flashes, accelerated heart rate, numbness or tingling, depersonalization, derealization, upset stomach, nausea, shortness of breath, feeling like you're going insane, dizziness, or feeling faint, you may just have anxiety. And I think I just named everything that every one of us has ever felt, because all of us in a way wrestle with anxiety. I got to be honest with you. I am not an overly anxious person, but I am married to one. And over the weekend, we had a lot of great conversations about like, hey, would it be okay if I shared one of my most funny memories of us being married? I remember one morning waking up. It was a couple of years after we had gotten married, and my wife said, I said, hey, how you feeling? What's up? And she said, I just feel kind of anxious. I'm like, what's going on? Like, what, you know, as a fixer, I'm like, give me the problem. I'll fix it. I swear. It's good marriage advice, right? She said, I'm feeling kind of anxious because I feel like I need to be worried about something, but I don't know what it is that I need to be worried about. I remember literally being floored. I mean, I was like, wait, you don't have anything you're anxious about. You're just anxious because you feel like you should be anxious about something. See, people that have my personality type, we're like, just own it, accept it, like have a great day. Like that would be awesome. But for those of you that struggle with anxiety, you go, yeah, that's the way I feel right now. Like I'm kind of at peace, like that music we just played. I mean, I'm feeling like my faith is stronger and I'm feeling that I have some peace in my life, but I'm now getting anxiety because I'm thinking, oh no, I should be anxious about something and I don't know what it is that I should be anxious about. Or I forgot for a moment about what I should be anxious about and all of a sudden the anxiety starts to build. Well, I hope today helps. I genuinely hope today helps because anxiety, it literally is it's something we feel, something we carry. In fact, to me, when I do feel anxious, it kind of feels like a software virus. You know what I mean? This is for those of you that love technology. I think we carry around anxiety like a software virus. You know, you'll just be moving along on your home PC or your tablet, whatever, maybe, or your phone, and everything's just working slower. You know, the battery's draining quicker than it should. Stuff won't load as fast as it should. And it just, it's like it's robbing your ability to operate at full strength. That's what anxiety does, right? It subtly slows us down and it quietly keeps us from operating at our full speed. It subtly slows us down and then it quietly, it just kind of runs in the background. Quietly keeps us from operating at our full speeds. But the problem with anxiety is that ultimately anxiety hurts us and it helps no one. We all know this consciously, but that doesn't help. But we know that it doesn't help anyone and it just hurts us, but we just continue to do it. I love what one author said, that anxiety is like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do and it gets you nowhere. Have you ever heard this before? I think that's fantastic. That's how anxiety feels like. It's like you're in a rocking chair, you know? And you got something to do, which is nice, but it's not going anywhere. It's a lot of movement, but it's not taking you anywhere. So what do we do about it? Well, this is to me, I've got a buddy named Grant who is great with word pictures. And I saw him do this and I thought, that's exactly how anxiety feels. That anxiety really feels like this big rock, right? This is heavier than I anticipated. I was hoping for like a brick that I could manage, but this is literally going to take some effort, but this is how anxiety feels. It feels heavy. It's got some weight to it, but we just carry it around, right? It's just literally like we're just walking around in life having this conversation with whoever it is we're having with, going about our day, trying to deal with our families. And for the first 60 seconds, I'm fine. But if I had to carry this all day long, it would eventually slow me down. It would affect my life. And so what we do is we get a backpack, right? We get a backpack and we put it in a backpack because that'll at least make it easier. And we don't want anybody to see it. And so then we just carry it around. You remember when you were like in middle school and you first got assigned all your books and your Trapper Keepers, you know, and all the folders that you had, and your backpack was huge. You know, it was like bigger than you are. And you're just walking around with it, carrying it around. And that's the way anxiety works. People are like, hey, what's in your backpack? You're like, don't worry about it. It's fine. So I got it, man. I got it, right? Because we carry anxiety. We carry the uncertainty of the future, the problem of our family, the outcome of what's going to happen with our job, the situation with our kids, the situation with our aging parents, the drama in the relationship. We just put it in a backpack and we just carry it around. I walked into today thinking I was going to preach the whole message with this backpack, but I can't because this is literally too heavy to hold on to. So I'm going to set it down, which is not what we do with anxiety, okay? So this is where the metaphor is breaking down. We don't actually set it down, but just for the sake of my own shoulders and the lack of working out that I've been doing lately, I'm not going to carry that. So what's the answer then? What do we do? Well, it's easy. Just stop. No, I mean, serious. Just stop. Stop being anxious. Have you ever had someone tell you that? And you're like, you don't get it. You definitely don't get me. Why is that? Because you can't stop. You don't know how to stop. We don't know how to stop because we're just carrying it around. So just so you know today, the answer is not just stop. But I do think there is an answer. I do think there is a way where we can overcome our anxiety. I want to go to two different places in the New Testament. This is interesting because we're going to look at these two letters. One that was written by a guy named Peter, close follower of Jesus. One that was written by a guy named Paul, a close follower later on in his life of Jesus. But it's crazy because what we believe about these is though we believe they are letters that these two men wrote to certain people, we also believe that they are the word of God. This is crazy. But we believe somehow that as these men were writing these words, that they are literally inspired by God. And I can't explain all that to you in our short amount of time. Even if I had more time, I don't know that I could explain it to you. But it's one of the mysteries of faith is that we believe that God has literally spoken. And in both these cases, these two men spoke specifically about anxiety. Now, I don't know what they had anxiety about in the first century because they didn't have fidget spinners. And so clearly I'm like, well, you didn't have anxiety because y'all didn't have any spinners. You know, you have to have a fidget spinner to actually struggle with anxiety or vice versa, other way around. I don't know, but I don't know what they were struggling with. I don't know what they were anxious about, but I do know they spoke directly to it. And so I want to read you what they wrote because I think it's really, really helpful for your anxiety, for my anxiety. Here's what Peter said in 1 Peter. He begins this way with this section. He says, all of you, in Greek, which means all of you, right? Okay, so the people he's writing to, he's like, everyone included, everyone, all of it, all skate, right? We're all in this together, all of you. Clothe yourself with humility. Wait a second, I thought we were talking about anxiety. He's going to talk about anxiety in a second, but first he starts with humility, which I find very interesting because what does humility have to do with anxiety? Last week, we looked at the word fear. And I think the answer to overcoming fear is to be overwhelmed with the love of God. But when I think about fear, I don't think about the word love. In the same way, when I think about anxiety, I don't think about the word humility. But he's going to make a very strong case that both of these are related. Here's what he reaches out for back in the past. He said, all of you clothe yourself with humility toward one another because, and then he says something really important and powerful and fascinating and very strong, not very delicate or light. He says, God opposes the proud, but shows favor to the humble. This is phenomenal to me. That we have a God who, when it comes to humility, when we humble ourselves, God shows favor to people who humble themselves. But he opposes, he literally sets himself up against. This opposes is a military word that God brings all of his force against those who are proud. Uh-oh. Because all of us are proud, right? But he says God shows grace to, favor to, he shows kindness to, he helps those who come at this with humility. But he shows opposition to, he sets himself against those who are walking around in pride. What's the difference between pride and humility? You know this, but just to put it in layman's term, it's just this. Pride says, I got this, right? Unfortunately, I think a lot of us have a lot of pride, not around our anxiety. I don't believe there's anyone here that's like, oh, I feel proud of my anxiety. No, we feel shamed about our anxiety. But what we feel proud about is whatever the anxiety is, somehow that I feel like I got to handle the future, that I've got to be the one to meet the needs for my kids, that I've got to be the one to be able to fix the outcome for my aging parents, that the relationship drama, that I somehow have to be the one who can handle this. And so I think in pride, we say, oh, no, I it's fine. I got it. It's just my lot in life. It's mine to bear. This is what I got to handle. And in pride, it seems like he's saying, we just carry around all of our uncertainties and our unknowns and the things that we think we have to carry. See, pride says, I got this. Humility says, I can't. I'm aware of the fact that I can't control my kids. Control my kids. I can't even control my own life. I can't control my aging parents. I can't control my employer. I can't control the entire economy in regards to our financial state. I can't control that. And he says, now this conversation is helpful because we're getting somewhere when it comes to our anxiety. Do you think you have to? Do you think you can? Or are you willing to say, you know what, when it comes to those areas, I can't. So then he says something maybe even more emphatic with an outcome attached to it. He says, so here's what could happen. He says, humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand. If we believe more about how strong God is, then naturally our outcome would be, well, I should humble myself. I should get on my knees. I should bend my knee to the one who has the mighty hand. Humble yourselves under God's mighty hand that he may lift you up. Yeah, but I feel weighed down. He goes, yeah, well, you feel weighed down because you think you got to carry it. But as soon as you willingly say, I can't, you now all of a sudden, do you start to levitate? Well, no. Do you feel lighter? Yeah. Because all of a sudden now you're not carrying all that weight anymore. The problem is, it says, humble yourself, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time. In due time. See, I think part of the reason why we struggle with this, I have a friend named Levi Lusco who says that we shouldn't be ones to determine what due time is, right? I mean, we're the same people that burn our mouths on Hot Pockets. You know what I mean? Which is such a brilliant insight. I mean, the point of a Hot Pocket is you put it in the microwave and quickly you have a meal. And we can't even wait on that. So of course we're like, God, I prayed about this. God, I put it down and I don't feel any different. I still feel anxious. This isn't working, clearly. And God goes, hey, remember, I said, humble yourselves under my mighty hand that I may lift you up in due time. Due time might not be as soon as this message is over, as soon as the day's over, as soon as the week's over, as soon as the month's over, due time might be in a few months, in a few years, maybe in a couple of years, you might start to feel lighter if you begin to practice what he's asking us to do. So he says, okay, let me give it to you specifically. I've been talking about humility, but you asked about anxiety. Great question. Okay, now we're there. You ready? 1 Peter 5:7. He says, so cast all your anxiety on him. Why? Well, because he cares for you. Cast it on him. Throw it onto him. Take it off of your shoulders and literally put it on his. That's very different than the way we approach it, right? See, maybe, just maybe, anxiety stems from carrying something you weren't meant to carry. Maybe that thing you're anxious about that you think is mine to carry and mine to control, God's going, you can't control it. Yeah, but they're my kids and I love them. No. I know you love them. I'm just telling you, you can't control them. But my aging parents, like, what if I, should I just be irresponsible? No, don't be irresponsible. Be responsible. Help them. Care for them. But you can't carry them because that's not meant for you to carry. Maybe all of our anxiety stems from carrying this thing that we think we should carry that God's going, don't just set it down and throw it away. No, give it to me. Cast it onto me. See, and this is beautiful to me, but because God cares for you, you can cast your anxiety on him. It's because he cares that he wants to carry that thing that you weren't meant to carry. Maybe at this point, some of you are going, well, how do I know he cares for me? I mean, that's kind of vague. It's kind of general. Cast your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Like God's this eternal celestial care bear, and I'm just supposed to cast it on him because he cares? If you're asking that question, thank you, because that's what's next in my notes. And I want to talk about why I think you can believe that he cares for you. If you guys would, go ahead and bring that out at this point. This will be fairly dramatic because of the size of this. Come on. Yep. Mm-hmm. Why can we believe that God literally cares for us? I mean, what has he ever done that would show us that he actually cares for us? I mean, has there ever been any statement? Has there ever been anything he's ever said, anything he's ever done that would let you and I know that he actually cares for us? Thank y'all so much for doing that. This was an instrument of the government for centuries used to punish people who had done wrong. But see, at the core of our faith is a cross. At the core of our faith is not just something God said, but it's something God did to show you and me that he really does care. That he's not distant. That he's not numb to your anxiety and to the things that you're trying to carry. He goes, no, I understand all of that. In fact, maybe the most empathetic thing God has ever done is allowed his son to walk planet Earth, to feel what we feel, and then to sacrifice his own life, to willingly give up his own life to let us know that he really does care. See, the cross, the reason why the cross is so crucial to this conversation is because it reminds us that he's willing to carry us. He's willing to carry all of our stuff. And so when Peter said, hey, I'm telling you, our God is so kind and so personal and so genuine that when he says, bring all of your stuff to me. When he says, come to me, all of you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. He means it. That you can literally take the very thing that is weighing you down and zip it up so that OSHA will appreciate this. And you can literally cast it onto him. That you can take your worries and your fears and anxiety and you can throw it onto him. It's amazing how time works, but somehow the cross stood before time The cross stood in the middle of time, and the cross still stands today. That it is literally split time, and it transcends time, and you can still cast all of your anxiety and worries and fear onto him because he cares for you. And when you get fixated on that thing that you can't deal with, that you can't control, and you think it's your responsibility, and you think it's yours to fix and yours to control, he's saying, no, get a broader view. You need to back out. You need to back out from the microscopic view of your problem that you have, and remember that you have a God who went to the cross for you so that you could know beyond a shadow of a doubt that he cares for you. See, Peter, when he wrote about this, it was real to him because I would imagine he had a lot of anxiety about even what Jesus was going to say to him or do to him. Or, you know, Peter denied Jesus right at the most crucial moment of his life. But on that Sunday morning when Jesus was resurrected from the dead, Peter ran to the tomb after he had heard from these women that the tomb was empty. He ran to the tomb, which I find fascinating because he could have thought that Jesus was going to say, good to see you, Peter. Sit down. Let's talk. So you denied me, huh? I'm sure it was just once, wasn't it? No? Twice? Couldn't be. How many times, Peter? Three times? You can leave now. Thanks. But he didn't do that. He loved him. And so when Peter wrote, you can cast all your anxiety on him because I'm telling you, he cared for me in that moment and he cares for you. Some of you, you feel like a runaway. You feel like, yeah, but I've denied my faith. Yeah, but I've walked away from my faith. I set my faith down. It's still true. You can still cast your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Paul, though, when he wrote about it, he was more direct with what you need to do. For some of you, you go, well, that's kind of vague. And I mean, it works as an illustration. I get it because the cross, you know, you put it up there and, but is the nail going to hold and is the thing going to fall over? And I'm glad I'm not sitting in the front row. That's what some anxious people are naturally thinking. And I will say, I don't know how strong this nail is or this cross is, but I do know that the cross of Jesus won't let you down. I can say that, even though this one might at some point. Sorry about that. But Paul was more direct. He said, let me just specifically tell you what you should do, because maybe that's too difficult for you to comprehend. So he says, let me give it to you practically, okay? So for those of you that are like, okay, conceptual, got it. Give me the nuts and bolts. What am I supposed to do today? Paul's your guy. Here's what he says, Philippians 4. He says, do not be anxious about anything. Done. Case closed. Got it. Thanks, Paul. No, he does it in there. He says, okay, let's start with this. Don't be anxious about anything. So stop being anxious. I'm not going to leave you there hanging, though. I'm going to tell you how to do that. Here's what he says. But in every situation, by prayer and petition. So he says, when you feel the anxiety, when you feel the worry and the fear and it's creeping up on you and the sleeplessness is happening and you don't know if you can make it through another day and the panic attack starts and all of the side effects start coming, he says, you turn that anxiety into prayer. He says, you cast your anxiety onto him by turning your anxiety into prayer. This is the recipe, this is the cocktail, if you will, for overcoming anxiety, is you turn your anxiety into prayer. Again, the danger, though, is some people are going to be like, oh, pray? Seriously, bro? Like, that's your JV answer to my varsity problem? Like, come on. No, that's what Paul said, so don't shoot the messenger. You're welcome to shoot Paul. Paul said, yeah, turn it into prayer. But see, the problem is the due time thing, right? Because we're like, well, I tried prayer, and it didn't work. You know when you're on an airplane, you remember how some of you have never, you've never even listened to this because you don't have anxiety about flying. But for those of you that have anxiety about flying, you can recite exactly what they say about what to do because you're like, okay, I need to know this because this is the last flight I'll probably ever go on. And have you ever just looked around and be like, this feels like a plane that's probably going to go down. You know, just feel something about this feels like this is going to happen. Those of you who have anxiety, you feel that way every time you fly. And so, you know, when that thing drops, what do they say about that oxygen mask? They say, hey, you're going to put it on and you're not going to see it start to inflate. So should you just throw it down and give up? No. You are to trust the process that it's actually working, even though you can't see that it's working. Prayer's the same way. You got to trust the process. It's working, even though you might not see that it's working. Because we want it to work right here and now, but you can't give up. You got to keep at it. You got to keep with it. You got to stay with it. And you have to continue to cast your anxiety onto him through prayer. But if that's not enough, he's not done. He's got something else. He goes, so do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, and with thanksgiving. This is huge. He says gratitude has a role to play in all of this. What does gratitude have to do with anxiety? It has a lot to do with anxiety. I was talking to a friend recently. Her name is Wendy. She's a cancer survivor. I said, Wendy, what do you do about the fear of cancer returning? She said, it is an everyday thing. And she said, I've got to remind myself over and over and over again of what I'm grateful for, because it causes my fear of the future to snap back to reality. It gets me back right here and right now to what do I have now? God, thank you that I have my health right now. God, thank you that I have two kids that are awesome. Thank you. Thank you that I have an awesome husband. She says, this is what I got to tell myself over and over and over again. The way you overcome anxiety is you cast your anxiety onto him through prayer, and you cast your anxiety onto him by turning your anxiety into gratitude. You start naming out loud, if you have to, the things that you're grateful for here and now. Paul says, do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And then, this is what will happen. The peace of God, which transcends even our ability to understand it. Some of you, I can see you nodding right now because you go, oh yeah, I have experienced a peace in the middle of my anxiety that I cannot explain. And I love these words. It will guard your heart and your mind in Christ Jesus. It'll guard your heart. That this peace that is beyond any explanation, built by the cross, defended by the cross, will secure, will keep safe, will guard your heart and your mind. When I first read guard your heart, I thought about the Duke Blue Devils, the way they play basketball. You seen them pick up full court? You remember the way Bobby Hurley picked up full court? Remember the way Gene Wojciechowski picked up full court? Jay Williams, you remember how he picked up full court? What are they known for? What did they do? They slap the floor. They go, let's go, right here, right now. Some of you are like, are we at basketball camp right now? It's what I thought of. I just thought, honestly, because you think about it, they're basically saying, you're not getting around me. Let's go. Good luck. You're not getting around me. And that's what peace does. Peace surrounds our heart, slaps the floor and says, come on, anxiety, let's go. You're not getting around me, because I am built by a cross. I'm built by love. I'm built by a God who has a mighty hand. And I can't even explain how it works, but Paul says, if you cast your anxiety onto him through prayer and with thanksgiving, with gratitude, that you can experience the peace that it doesn't even make sense, that will guard your heart and your mind in Christ Jesus. See, the cross reminds us that God is willing to carry us. I think this is a big deal. The cross is a statement of empathy. The cross is a statement of sacrifice. That we have a God who says, I am willing to. I'm willing to. So bring it to me, because I'm not saying no. I'm saying yes. Come on. Bring it to me. But the story of our faith is not just about a cross. See, the beauty of the cross is that 3 days later, there was an empty grave. And though the cross reminds us that he's willing to, the empty grave reminds us that he's capable of carrying us. He said, once and for all, I defeated death. I defeated death. Your anxiety, it can't overcome me, because I've overcome death. So what do you do in the middle of your anxiety? There's a decision that we're all faced with. Will you try to carry your fears? Will you try to continue to carry your anxiety? Or would you be willing to? Will you be willing to cast your fear, your anxiety, on the one who cares for you? This is the question that every single one of us have to wrestle with every single day. What am I going to do today? Am I going to try to carry something I wasn't meant to carry? Or am I going to cast my anxiety onto the one who cares for me? I genuinely believe that no matter who you are, no matter how strong your anxiety is, that you can find victory, that you can overcome your anxiety, that tomorrow can be better than today, that a year from now you can look back and go, it's still there, it never leaves, but through prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, I've learned the practice of presenting my requests, of casting my anxiety onto him. And he cares for me. And the peace that transcends any human ability to explain it is guarding my heart, and it can guard yours as well.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. We make these messages available to give you a window into our church, but also to create a doorway for you to enter into community. If you'd like to know how we do that, you can email our online pastor at dave@northpoint.org. Have a great day.